Hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, it's time to talk all about skin cancers and taking care of your skin. And I'm chatting today with Dr. Jennifer Herman, who's a board certified fellowship trained dermatologist and dermatologic surgeon right here in Los Angeles in Beverly Hills. She's a graduate of both Princeton and Harvard, and she trained at University of Alabama. And she is working now right here in LA on Rodeo Drive near me. And we're chatting today all about skin. And I thought we'd chat, Jennifer, about skin cancer prevention, sun damage, and the dangers of indoor tanning. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here, and I'm happy to offer any advice and tips.
So last month, May, was Skin Cancer Awareness Month, and we were all so embroiled in all the COVID news and publicity that I think that got completely overwhelmed. So I think it'd be fun to and important to tell people again the importance of skin cancer and sun avoidance and how to prevent it. So what are your thoughts on how we should be exposing ourselves to just the right amount of sun to get vitamin D and not too much sun to get sun damage and skin cancer?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. And it's an important question because I think there's a lot of benefits of vitamin D. I think you can certainly take a supplement, a vitamin D supplement. I actually take a vitamin D supplement myself because I'm pretty strict about sun exposure because we absolutely know that UV radiation damages the DNA in skin cells. And that over time both leads to aging as well as pre and skin cancers. So, really protecting that skin's DNA is critical. And sun protection is the foundation of that. I think, there's so much, kind of common knowledge about, okay, sunscreens, hats, chapsticks with SPF, all these things are important. But there's a lot more than just that you can do. I think one of the key things is nutrition. And yes, vitamin D is important because it's an antioxidant. It can help improve immunity. But it's also really important to, maximize foods high in antioxidants. These are brightly colored fruits and vegetables. Avoid grilling in excess heat because they can degrade some of these vitamins and antioxidants. They also cause, heat can cause harmful byproducts, which can age and damage the skin. So it's really important to have, a good intake of antioxidants because that can help with DNA repair as well as help the skin stay healthy. It's also important to minimize your intake of highly refined sugars, trans fats, and processed meats. All of these can increase inflammation and damage collagen and skin and again, the DNA. Mm-hmm. One thing that's not always attractive to patients, but can be helpful for kind of aging and keeping the skin younger and healthier is intermittent fasting. When you fast...
I'm a big fan.
Yeah.
I'm doing it.
It's really hard, but what it does is it places your body in kind of a survival mode or a conservation mode, and this naturally activates a lot of repair pathways, so you're able to kind of reset things. And good DNA repair is really essential for keeping skin healthy and doing the functions that it's supposed to do. If DNA damage accumulates, then we start seeing signs of age, and ultimately that leads to pre and skin cancers. So protecting the DNA is critically important, and nutrition is a big one to help you do that. And another thing that you can do kind of outside of the whole, sun protection, sunscreen, sun shirts, all of that, is to use DNA repair enzymes themselves. So we naturally in the skin have these enzymes that help with DNA repair, help keep the integrity of the skin healthy. But over time, we start to lose these. At about age 30, they start to decline. And then suddenly we need more of them as we age. And so if you use a topical lotion or cream that has these enzymes in it, you can actually put them back in the skin. And so you can help repair. So one of my favorite sunscreens, actually, it's a newer product by Cellular MD. It's got these DNA repair enzymes built into the sunscreen. So you're actually repairing as well as protecting, which is awesome because you're getting kind of the best of both worlds. And I think of it as a smarter sunscreen. So nutrition is important.
So cool. Yeah. And antioxidants, I totally agree with. And then I love the idea of intermittent fasting boosting some of your DNA repair enzymes too. Like in an inexpensive thing to do, just don't eat. Just limited time windows of eating, actually. And people think you starve and fast all day, but you don't. You can actually choose your time block and then eat within that time block. That's so effective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's really interesting research on just aging in general. And I always think of aging and skin cancer kind of on a continuum, because as you start aging, you know, more damage accumulates, and then, you know, you start seeing the pre and skin cancers. But you know, I think it's really interesting to see all these studies that have been done on mice and other animals where intermittent fasting has really increased longevity. Really because we're thinking it's helping on the DNA repair front. It's kind of allowing your body to kind of reset so that genetic code is read correctly, so your cells can function like they should. The skin is no different. I think the intermittent fasting, it helps all of your organs, including your skin, which is your biggest organ.
Helps with actually visceral fat too, which is so great, because we look at fat like it's
no way to get rid of that.
It's not just the inches you can pinch. It's actually the most important fat to get rid of is your visceral fat that surrounds your internal organs. And like, there's no other way to melt that other than calorie restriction, which forces you to burn internal fats. But the other day I saw a patient who was sitting in my chair, and he had just gotten so tan, I thought he was out in the sun. He was like, no, I just went to a tanning booth and I just about had a heart attack because he's like, can I go to the tanning booth tomorrow after fillers? And I was like, yeah, if you want to like just shoot me already, because that's so horrible. And for $16, you got two sessions of indoor tanning and a lifetime of cancer. So tell me and tell everybody, like, how bad is one session of indoor tanning in a tanning booth?
Well, you know, it's interesting because actually when I was a resident, I did a lot of legislation and lobbying, you know, against the indoor tanning industry, and tried to get legislation passed in states to limit, you know, the ability of children to get into tanning beds, because a lot of states don't have regulations and kids can get in, and it just is so harmful. You know, a lot of people think that they're, quote, safer and smarter because it's more of a controlled time. It's set for a certain time limit.
You're getting a base tan. That's what I keep.
So many problems with that. First, you know, the actual UV that comes out of a tanning bed is UVA. So when you're talking about the vitamin D argument, that's actually UVB that's important for stimulating that, not UVA. So it's not even really a logical argument to use that it's helping to stimulate vitamin D. Mm-hmm. It also, you know, some of the bulbs themselves, it's much higher intensity than what actually comes from the sun at noonday sun. So it's extraordinarily concentrated, and that absolutely goes in and damages again that DNA. So it's extraordinarily harmful. There's definitely studies supporting that tanning bed use is linked to increased rates of melanoma, which is the most dangerous type of skin cancer. Mm-hmm. It's really so harmful. And you know, if you want to get extra vitamin D, you can get that through, you know, supplementation. If you, you know, want to get the quote base tan, which we'll talk about in a second, you know, a lot of the spray tans are really good now. And a lot of these things, though, the wipes and topicals that you can buy over the counter are much more natural. They don't have that orange tint. They actually look very natural on. Sometimes even when patients come in, it's hard to tell that they've used a self-tanner. Usually you can tell on the hands and feet. But they're really much more, you know, much more natural looking. And that is a very superficial reaction on the skin. It's kind of the ingredient in there interacts with the dead layer of the skin called the stratum corneum. So it's really not harmful. You know, maybe it causes a tiny bit of oxidative stress, but in general, it's much, much, much safer than going into a tanning bed. The base tan that everyone, you know, thinks is, quote, the healthy tan. So it's a total oxymoron. There's nothing, there's no truth in terms of a healthy tan. A tan is really your body's, it's a sign that your body's defense mechanisms are at work. Right. So your skin is smart. It senses that DNA damage from the UV, and it activates the melanocytes, which are the pigment causing cells, to make more melanin. that disperses, you know, that pigment called melanin disperses in the skin. It covers and shields the DNA to try to protect it. So think of it as, you know, the tan is this umbrella of pigment that's trying to protect your skin cells' DNA. So it's, you know, it's really a sign that your body is trying to defend itself. And it's, there's nothing healthy about that. It's a defense mechanism. And it's a sign that you're being damaged and your body is trying to survive.
So true or false? So indoor tanning is good for getting a base tan.
False. No, false.
Absolutely false. And true or false, having a tan at all, is that good at all, or there's no benefit?
That's another good question. And, you know, people that have chronic sun exposure and they do create that kind of shield over time, you know, that can maybe give them some internal protection, just like, you know, patients who have a slightly darker skin tone, they have more baseline protection than someone who has very light skin. The problem is a base tan gives you an SPF of about 3. So that's the equivalent of wearing a wet white t-shirt at the beach, and everyone knows who's worn a wet white t-shirt at the beach that the UV goes right through that and you can still get burned. It also gives patients this false sense of security that, oh, they've got this tan so they can go out and they get more sun exposure and feel like they're protected. And so they often don't use as much sunscreen or try to be as, you know, take precautions. And they end up with, you know, additional sunburn on top of the tan. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, there's really nothing good about a base tan.
What is the incidence of increased skin cancer lifetime risk? Do you remember kind of some of those statistics? Like, I know I remember reading in med school and residency about, you know, one or two blistering sunburns and how they increase your lifetime skin cancer risk by so much. So if you've had a blistering sunburn, do you remember what those are?
You know, it's really hard to pinpoint actual numbers in this type of thing. I know there's one study, you know, that showed increased tanning specifically. Patients had an increased melanoma risk of 75%, which is quite high. It's a much higher increased risk. You know, I think it's really hard to do accurate studies in terms of looking at those numbers. And honestly, I haven't looked at it, you know, in the last, you know, couple of years to know what the latest is. But, you know, it's definitely, you know, a preventable thing. It's like smoking. We know better. You know, it took 100 years for us to get legislation to pass some of these things, you know, to prohibit, you know, and put regulations, especially for minors to smoke. Right. Not all states have come, you know, not all states are like California where there's a ban under 18. And so there's more work that definitely needs to be done on that front. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it definitely increases the risk of skin cancer, just as, you know, burns outside do. A lot of it, though, you know, in addition to sun exposure is genetics. You know, I think, you know, some ethnicities have higher rates of skin cancer. And it's, yes, it's because they don't have as much baseline protection. But also, I think there's differences biologically in people's ability to repair the DNA damage. So, you know, some populations probably have increased capacity to repair DNA, while others, you know, have less capacity. So mm-hmm. I think that's also, you know, something important.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are the newest innovations coming out in skincare this year? Like anything popular or trending? Like last year seemed to be all about hyaluronic acid in every single product. And
there's a lot. And I think, you know, for 2020 specifically, I think, again, this, you know, COVID has been on everyone's mind. So I do have a lot of patients, you know, really looking to try to optimize their skin health. So yes, rather than thinking of just the near term, patients are more interested in doing things that are going to help prevent aging and keep their skin healthier over the long term. So, you know, again, this kind of comes back to what can we do to prevent aging, you know, and eventually skin cancer, you know, but that's kind of going back to focusing on nutrition, supplements that are smarter. There is a supplement that can specifically help to prevent skin cancer now. It's called nicotinamide or niacinamide. It's a form of vitamin B3. Mm-hmm. And it great studies that have come out to show that that helps reduce your, you know, your risk of skin cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, other preventative things are sleep hygiene. Again, give yourself that time to repair. Exercise is another one. It helps decrease stress, decrease inflammation, helps even build collagen and elastin. Mindfulness is a big one. That's another thing that, you know, just resetting and kind of, you know, decreasing some of that baseline stress can be enormously helpful in terms of keeping your skin healthy. And then, you know, adjusting hormones sometimes themselves can be helpful to help, you know, patients keep the skin younger and healthier. So one trend I think is really kind of this more holistic look and really what can I do to prevent aging for the longer term rather than just focusing on, okay, treatment A or B in the near term. So I think it's kind of looking at the horizon and looking more broadly. And then I think a second trend is really the use of increased use of artificial intelligence. I think we're going to see a lot of new devices that use AI that, you know, use sensors and they detect temperature tissue temperatures in the skin and can really target different areas specifically and much more precisely than we could before. Mm-hmm. There's also a lot of software systems that use algorithms of millions of images to help aid in the diagnosis of skin conditions. And I think when these are used with a dermatologist experience, the combination, I think, will lead to improved and faster diagnoses for patients, especially where there's limited access to dermatology. In some of these areas that are a bit more rural and there aren't dermatologists practicing. So I think, you know, artificial intelligence is going to be big. And, you know, as more comes out, we're going to have, you know, more targeted, more efficient, more precise treatments that we can offer that are minimally invasive. And then, of course,
talk a little bit about, like, in terms of aging for the long haul, what can women do in terms of menopausal hormone changes attacking their skin and how to prevent that? Because that's something every woman over 50, their collagen goes down by, you know, 50% or crazy amounts within 5 years after perimenopause onset. So are there things we should be doing?
Yeah. So, you know, as we age and as estrogen goes down specifically, we definitely lose integrity of the skin. So we lose elastin, we lose collagen, there's more water loss, so the skin dries out. So one way to kind of deal with that is to do it directly through adjustments in hormones. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence that bioidentical hormones can make these small adjustments and can help revert things back to, you know, a little bit of a younger time. So the skin is more plump, it has more elastin, it's, you know, younger and more youthful. So you definitely can, you know, adjust hormones themselves. But there's other things that you can do too to stimulate collagen synthesis. You know, in my office, we do a ton with laser resurfacing. And some of the ablative lasers, they form tiny little microscopic wounds in the skin, and that stimulates collagen synthesis. And these treatments are great because you are growing your own collagen and you are regenerating and thickening up the skin without using products to do it. So it's a very natural way to smooth lines and wrinkles, especially in those who have a lot of sun damage, where there's pigmentation problems and a lot of fine lines. So there's absolutely ways to stimulate that collagen synthesis and kind of reset the skin to a younger time. Tightening devices can do that too. They use heat that can often stimulate collagen synthesis. So there's really a lot of things that you can do in combination to kind of try to reset that skin to a younger time. And I think, you know, when I look at my patients who do the best with these procedures, it's really the ones who are also taking care of themselves from the inside out. So it's patients who are looking at their nutrition and doing other preventative things to really, you know, make sure that they maintain, you know, results as long as they can and set themselves up for just, you know, overall health going forward.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Have you seen more young people requiring Mohs surgery and skin cancer excisions? I think in my own practice, I see that where people, ethnicities like Hispanic people, young people tend to think that they're immune because they have pigmentation. But I'm seeing more and more patients who are Hispanic with skin cancers or darker skin tones getting skin cancers.
Yeah, it's really true. And I think, you know, part of it is just lifestyle. People are outdoors more, and I think there is a myth that does need to be busted, that darker skin is the, you know, total protection. Bob Marley, who obviously had very dark skin, he actually died of melanoma.
Bob Marley, I didn't know that. Really?
It was on his toe. You know, in darker skin, we see skin cancers in all types. And I will say, I have seen it in younger patients, and I think with increasing frequency. I had a patient just today who is in her early 30s, who had a recurrent skin cancer. It had been treated elsewhere, you know, probably 2 years ago. And it didn't look like much, before I did the biopsy, but it was there. You know, she had noticed a change and it absolutely had recurred from that. So she even had it younger than that. The youngest patients I've seen are teenagers, you know, and it's often more of an environmental exposure. Sure, there's a few genetic conditions that can, you know, predispose you, that have problems with DNA repair, typically. But I think a lot of people are, you know, have more active lifestyles outdoors, and you know, they're just getting more sun exposure, and despite the increasing you know, evidence of you know, the dangers of UV and harmfulness to the skin specifically, we're not doing a great job in terms of educating people about just how important it is to protect, especially when you're younger.
Yeah, talk a little bit about pigmentation. I think that is like 30% of women suffer from melasma, hyperpigmentation. Are you doing anything innovative or new in your practice with like glutathione or transuxamic acid? And can you tell patients, like listeners, what that's about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't do the glutathione, just because I think there's some safety questions there. But for melasma, I always tell patients it's really you're in this for the long haul, and you have to be patient. And usually it requires a combination of treatments. So I don't go at it single-handedly with just, you know, a bleaching agent, for instance, a topical cream. Usually we combine that. I've had great success with our picosecond laser. So the problem with most treatments for melasma is that heat absolutely aggravates it and worsens the condition. And most all of our lasers are based on heat because they heat up a target and that's how we get rid of it. So the picosecond laser, it delivers energy so quickly in a picosecond that there's almost no time to generate any heat. So for melasma patients, it's actually much safer. So doing a series of very light treatments with picosecond laser, while doing usually a little higher percentage of hydroquinone or a non-hydroquinone type bleaching agent, as well as transuxamic acid for some patients, you know, really that combination can do a good job. You know, also thinking
about...
Are
you using transuxamic acid injected intralesionally, or are you using it topically or orally?
I'm using it orally.
Orally. So you can take these pills of transuxamic acid, which normally is like product used for hypercoagulability, right?
Right. Yeah. But we use slightly lower doses. And we don't, you know, if we understood the biology of melasma better, I think we would have better treatments for it. Because we don't perfectly understand it, I think that's, you know, one thing that makes it challenging to treat.
You know, but maybe, I think you're absolutely right. Like, it's crazy how many people think that they just need one really intense laser to solve all their problems. And like, that is the one thing that you don't need, because it's going to pigment you.
And I've seen patients come in who've tried everything. They've had peel after peel after laser, and it's just gotten worse and worse. And I'm like, okay, we need to stop. We need to reset. And you really have to, less is more when it comes to melasma. The second you think you can add more energy, the second it backfires. So it's really having an honest conversation with the patients about pigmentation. If you can, you know, stop a birth control pill, you know, that's often a trigger for some. You know, so it's a combination of genetics and UV exposure, and we do, you know, everything to try to optimize the protection from UV, but it's sometimes not enough when there's a strong genetic component. So kind of coming up with a thoughtful combination of, you know, kind of minimally invasive, non-heat based treatments is usually the most effective.
Yeah, it really does boil down to a long-term consistent regimen. And I even tell patients, like, having melasma is like having diabetes. You're just going to have to maintain it forever and ever and ever. You'll have periods where it's under really great control, and then you'll have flare-ups where it's like maybe not so controlled and you goes off the map and you have to suppress it down a little bit. But I think you're right. If we could only discover a cure for melasma, we would just literally be billionaires and never have to work again. It's like every woman's problem at some point in her life, whether it's pregnancy or hormones or menopause. It's crazy.
Pigmentation is big.
Yeah, it's like, it's interesting. It's the evolutionary protection system of the face, but it's of the skin, but it's gone in overload. But I love your theory or your idea of prevention, the three core principles that you mentioned, prevention, procedures, and then consistency. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that all patients should do. So,
yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's so easy to just focus on the procedure component and, you know, forget about the other two, which are equally, if not more important. And I think of prevention really as the foundation, and that, you know, again, is kind of centered on nutrition, using, you know, supplements, you know, being smarter with supplements, taking those that really can help with, you know, skin aging and anti-inflammation, adjusting hormones if needed, exercising, practicing mindfulness, all these things are just core to prevention. And that really sets you up for, you know, longer term results for when you go and do the procedures, which is kind of the second aspect. So whereas prevention is the foundation, procedures kind of help reset the skin to get you back a few years. And there's so many different options now. I mean, we have over 30 lasers and devices in the office, so it's really great to be able to use a combination of things and really tailor, you know, treatment protocols so they best serve patients. We're not to use laser to fix all problems. So it's really nice to kind of be able to pick and choose to thoughtfully come up with a treatment plan for patients. And then we continue with, you know, consistency. So my office is definitely not a quick fix Botox pop-up, all about helping patients for the long term. And that means kind of doing smaller maintenance treatments, you know, consistently revisiting again prevention, and trying to keep that skin younger and healthier over time. I think of, you know, skincare and skin health as a journey. And we continue that journey into the future, and we make adjustments as the skin changes. But rather than thinking of it as, okay, I just need to tackle one problem or this problem or that problem, we try to look at it a bit more comprehensively, you know, focused both on your prevention, procedures, as well as kind of consistency afterwards.
Well, I thank you so much for all those really great tips on skincare. And with this being Skin Cancer Awareness Month, everyone should remember that sun gives you 90% of your skin aging changes. 90%, that's a lot. So yep. The one thing you can literally do for yourself to age better is wear your sunscreen. And we never get tired of saying it, right? Isn't that right, Dr. Harper?
Wear your sunscreen, but also, you know, take your nicotinamide because that helps with DNA repair. Use your DNA repair enzymes. You know, make sure you've got adequate nutrition because all of those things work, you know, in conjunction to give you more protection and repair damage because sunscreen's not perfect. You know, there's a lot of people who wear the sunscreen and they still get color or they get burned when they're outside. So kind of, you know, trying to tackle it from all fronts gives you more protection, more repair, and hopefully healthier, younger skin going forward.
Yes, there you have it. So thanks so much for tuning in. And where can all of our listeners find you on your various handles?
Instagram at Dr. Jennifer Herman, and practice website is RodeoDerm, RodeoDerm.com.
And then don't forget, guys, you can find me on my Instagram doing amazing things with people's faces at Beauty by Dr. K, and my website is the same, Beauty by Dr. K, DrKay.com. And try my Ultimate SPF 50 tinted and mineral sunscreen. I love mineral sunscreens the best. And I know you probably do too, Jennifer. But that's it for now. Stay beautiful, stay sun safe, and find us back here the same time. If you haven't already ranked, rated, and reviewed the podcast, you can definitely do that on iTunes, and we'll send you a little free sample of some skincare. That's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.